Unbelievable. Bette Midler. I saw her live here at the Palais. Probably with those same singers, the backup singers or backup girls, as she says to them. Boogie Wiggle Bugle Boy. Of course, a World War II song. And our next story is, because there's increasing interest in military tourism, particularly in Europe, with the 75th anniversaries of the liberation of countries involved in World War II, there are families of soldiers who are making the pilgrimage to sites such as the beaches of Normandy. And now there's a detailed travel guide from publishers Rough Guides to the liberation route across Europe. I spoke earlier to one of the authors of the guide, Nick Inman, who says the guide, which took a solid 7 months for he and co-author to research and write, the guide is now available. Here's Nick.
Welcome to Travel Writers Radio, Nick.
Hello, yes. Hello, Graham. Welcome. Yeah, thank you.
Now, the book you've put together, I gather, is a celebration, the right word, but it's certainly marking 75 years since the liberation of Europe. And basically, as I understand it, it's there for people who would like to maybe follow their grandparents, I guess they'd be now, if they were involved in the war in that period of time. How did it sort of come about?
Well, it was a commission. It was started by an organisation called Liberation Routes Europe, which is a Dutch organisation. They're really pan-European, but they're based in Holland.
Right.
And they're trying to encourage interest in commemorating the war. So they wanted to do a book to add to their... They've got a website as well, but they wanted to do a book. So they went to Rough Guides in Britain and asked them to make a book.
Okay.
And Rough Guides came to me and... That's how it started.
Well, it's certainly a terrific book. I'm looking at it now. I didn't throw it on the scales, but there's quite a few hundred, 384 pages, not counting the acknowledgements and the credits. So for people who are interested in military history, and I guess those of us around the Commonwealth probably had relations who were involved in Europe, the theatres of war in Europe, and would find this quite a fascinating book. It's such a big topic. How did you decide to start? You're a journalist by background, aren't you?
Yes, a journalist and travel writer.
Right, yeah. Terrific.
I prefer to write books, but I do a lot of journalism as well.
Yeah, okay.
So it's all part of the same thing. So the answer to your question is that Rough Guides gave me a blank sheet of paper a year ago, July 2018. And they said, what could this book look like? You know, we had to invent the whole concept. We were told it had to cover 8 countries, because those are the 8 countries that this organization, the Liberation Routes, deals with mainly. So the 8 countries are Italy, France, Britain, the Low Countries, Germany, Poland, and the Czech Republic. So that was the brief to keep to those countries.
Right.
But we include other ones as well where they come into the story, like Denmark and Greece, but only marginally. So it's mainly about the routes of the liberating armies through Europe from 1943 to 45.
Right.
So that was the starting point. We had to cover all that. We had to have 8 chapters, one on each country. But I also wanted to have features to explain the background, because I think it's very important to put all this in context.
Sure.
Otherwise, you know, for the new generation, you don't know what you're talking about. So as well as the 8 principal chapters, we have lots of features and boxes and explanations of biographies and all that sort of thing.
Do you believe that people might get this book and then look to follow the armies that undertook these liberation routes in World War II?
Oh, definitely. You know, it adds a different dimension to a holiday, because instead of a holiday being just lying on the beach and having fun and hedonism, this takes you back to history, recent history. It's very serious, raises lots of themes, and lots of people are interested in it. And it's not just military history. This is also civilian history.
Right.
So you can follow this with your family. You can visit places, you know, museums and recreations and even cemeteries. You know, there's lots of cemeteries, and you know, to get a feel for what it was like living in those times.
And I noticed one chapter I couldn't sort of avoid called Atrocities. That must have been a difficult decision to make, to, you know, write that.
Well, there were certain things we decided right from the outset. Well, one thing is we mustn't be Anglocentric in the wider sense, you know, because often the war is interpreted from the point of view of Britain, from America, from the Anzac, you know,
yeah,
fighters, you know. So we wanted to avoid that, and we didn't want to avoid truths, you know. So atrocities is part of facing the reality of it. You know, that there were lots of atrocities, and there were atrocities committed by both sides, not just the Nazis.
Sure.
So that all had to be in there for the sake of objectivity.
Now, have you actually, did you go back to these places and revisit them in this last 12-month period?
No, we didn't have time, because the whole schedule for the whole book was 7 months, from July to December. Yeah, I've never done a book so fast.
No.
So we didn't have time to visit everything. So between us, Joe and me, we've seen as much as we can.
Right.
And I continue to visit places now. But we had a team of experts on the ground, you know, somebody in Poland and Italy who would know these things intimately. So, you know, between us, we put together all the information, you know, but we couldn't visit everywhere.
No. So you had to do a lot of interviewing yourself, yeah?
Yes, a lot of research with books, you know, some research with the internet, but also as much original research as possible. Yeah, there's plenty of information around. You know, as a journalist, you need to know how to sort information, good from bad.
Yes,
and ask questions. Yeah. So,
did you get led down a garden path or two with your information?
I don't think so, because I'm now experienced enough, I think, to ask the right questions. And you've always got, you know, like I talked about the Anglocentric business, you've always got to be prepared to ask difficult questions of yourself. You know, like, you know, I'm British, so, you know, I might be too fair on Churchill, for example.
Yeah.
So you need to know, to be able to ask those questions. You know, I mean, was the Anzio landings a disaster, or was it a, you know, hero's thing? You know, you've got to be very, very straight about it and not accept the myths, as it were.
So did you find any great surprises, or did you reveal, you know, untruths that had gone unchecked?
That's a hard question. Well, I think we did, but I mean, it's all been done by historians, so I can't say we found something fresh, but things that are not often talked about, like, for example, Italy changed sides during the war.
Yes.
You can imagine that. They were fascists in 1 month, and the next month they were fighting with the Allies. And that caused terrible, terrible suffering, you know, thousands of deaths, and it's hardly ever talked about. That's one thing. And another thing is the political aspect of the resistance movements, because we always think of the French resistance as sort of rather noble, you know, fighters for, you know, moral high ground, and really many of them were communists, and, you know, they're fighting for political reasons.
Sure.
So things like that surprised me.
I mean, obviously, the what happened to the Jews was pretty widespread throughout Europe, but I gather there were also other religions persecuted, like in Poland, for example. That's pretty much a Catholic country. There were a lot of Catholics who were persecuted.
Well, there's an awful lot of people persecuted. I mean, the contents of the concentration camps were gypsies, Roma, Jews, of course, Freemasons, gays, disabled people. You know, the Nazis had a long, long list of people to persecute.
Yes.
You know, the Jews obviously took the main part of it, but there was lots of other people who, you know, suffered as well. You know, even the Italians, you know, the Italians who stayed loyal to their governments were persecuted because they became enemies of Nazi Germany.
Yeah, well, we do some terrible things to ourselves in the name of righteousness sometimes.
Yeah, yes, no, that's right. Well, good and evil got entirely mixed up in the Second World War. You know, now we look back at it and we think we know right from wrong, good and bad, and there was a, you know, war to save the Jews, and really it was a much, much more complicated moral issue than that. You know, there's loads of people making very dodgy moral decisions.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't at all clear. Like the bombing campaign, you know, the strategic bombing campaign by the Allies was mainly an atrocity, an act of murder,
sure.
and yet we treat it as if it was a liberating aspect.
Yeah, it's very difficult, as you say. You've obviously got to tread very warily and with, you know, your wits about you to know whether you're in fact stepping over a line you shouldn't.
Yes, well, I think as a journalist, you should not be too wary. You know, you have to ask the right questions, of course, and you have to be sure of your fact.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should hold back for fear of offending anybody, because otherwise the myths persist. You know, the myths that the Allies didn't commit atrocities will go on to the next generation. And I think they have to be put fairly on the table. You know, it was all that the war was of a piece. You know, we can't choose the bits we like and ignore the bits we don't like.
No. Now, having completed this task, obviously in Guinness World Record time, has it inspired you to do anything more along these lines, Nick?
Oh, definitely. Well, after it, I wrote an essay of my own about the Italian business, about changing sides, because it's such a complicated and interesting thing. So I wrote an essay for my own, you know, for my own pleasure, I suppose. And I will continue researching it. You know, it's a bottomlessly interesting subject. You know, there's loads and loads of things still to do about it.
But you've obviously found an interesting niche.
Yes, no, I think so. Well, I think the Second World War is global. It's a world war. So it's not the same thing as Vietnam and Korea. I think they'd be much more difficult to do in an objective sense.
Yes.
So and this affects everybody. I think it's more than a niche. You know, I think it has a universal effect. And when you said before about it was our grandfathers we'd be remembering, yes. You're actually wrong, because I'm of a generation where it's my father. My father was involved in the liberation, so I've been finding out his history, and yeah. I think there are still people, you know, who are you know, that close to the war, you know, they're still finding out about it.
There is a lot of family military tourism, you know, where children and grandchildren are going to see where the father or the grandfather fought. You know, in peaceful times now, obviously they're going to the beaches of Normandy.
Yeah.
Nick, were your Dutch masters, if I could call them that, were they happy with the outcome? Has it achieved their objective?
Extremely, extremely. You know, we had a long talk when we first set up the project. We established very clearly what they wanted, and we had a bit of discussion along the way. We had to leave some things out, but they were very, very happy with the outcome. Yes,
okay.
They love it.
And if you were to suggest a route for people who might be coming from the other side of the world to look at the liberation route and, you know, follow some interesting trails, where would you start and where would you finish?
Well, firstly, if you've got a particular interest, you should follow that. You know, if you do have a family member who was in the Italian campaign, you know, go to Italy. But if you're just coming from this generally, just general interest, then I would start with the D-Day beaches.
Yes.
And work your way across France east to the German border. And if you can, continue into Germany, because that was the main advance, and that's where most of the monuments are.
Okay. Well, it would be very interesting. It's a book that's probably going to check the weight of your carry-on baggage, but worth having maybe in the checked-in baggage for when you get to where you want to go. There are plenty of photographs and lots of interesting chapters. It covers all those countries that were intimately involved. So, Nick, congratulations on the book. Now, it's available through Rough Guides, so you can get the book here. It's called Travel the Liberation Route Europe. It's the sort of book I found that you could pick up, read a chapter, they're not so long, and put it back down. And you hadn't sort of lost anything through not going chronologically. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's what we wanted. We wanted you to be able to dip into different parts.
Yeah.
There's lots of features, lots of short texts.
Right.
So you don't have to read it from beginning to end at all. No.
Well, Nick, thank you very much for your time. I know it's... You're in Spain at the moment. You're living in France, but you're visiting Spain. And I hope I haven't put a dent in your working holiday over there, but I do appreciate your time to talk to us here on Travel Writers Radio.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Graham.
That was Graham Kemlow speaking with Nick Inman, co-author of Travel the Liberation Route Europe, a 380-page guide that details things to see and experience as you followed the Allied advance across Europe. It is published by Rough Guides.
You're listening to the Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.